told, in connection with the Mahalikim, that the roles between the Nitzis and Rabbi Sizbea, after the death of Rabbi Yitzchok Fried in Balozhin. Rabbi Yitzchok Fried was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchok in Balozhin, who was the son of the Chai in Balozhin. When Rabbi Yitzchok in Balozhin passed away, his older son-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchok, became the Rosh Yeshiva of Balozhin. The Nitziv was the younger son-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchok Fried. The Nitziv was the youngest son-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchok Fried. Then, when Rabbi Yitzchok Fried, the older son-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchok Fried, passed away, so a machlokes developed between two candidates, Rabbi Sizbea, Rabbi Chaim Farah, and the Nitziv. Now, I don't have to mention that I am completely impartial in respect to this litigation, in view of the fact that both were ancestors of mine. So, the student body at the Yeshiva of Balozhin, that was 90 years ago, was split. One faction of the student body was on the side of Rabbi Yisrael, and the other faction was on the side of the Nitziv. And this conflict could not be resolved among themselves. Consequently, they decided to summon three gedolim to decide who should be the Rosh Yeshiva. Now, the Nitziv won in this litigation. The three gedolim that were summoned to decide this question were Rabbi Yitzchok Elchanan and Rabbi Tevel Miminsk, that's the author of the Nachas Dorit. You know, Nachas Dorit, Amalekhan, who was himself a Talmid Murek of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. And the third was the Magid of Vilna. In Vilna, they had a tradition, since the time of the Goen, not to refer to anyone as the Rav of Vilna, out of respect to the Goen of Vilna. So the Magid of Vilna really fulfilled all the functions of the Rav. That was the name of that Magid of Vilna, was Rabbi Feivel. Now, Rabbi Feivel, he presided over the Beis Din. And when he opened the discussion, so he said, this week for me is like the week of Ayesha. Now, I'm a Magid in Vilna, and I'm accustomed every Shabbat to discuss the Parshas HaShavua. And in the discussion of the Parshas HaShavua, I always draw a contrast between the saint in the Parsha and the villain in the Parsha. And I never have any difficulty in drawing this contrast. I always find in the Sedra a saint and a villain. In Bereishis, so I draw a contrast between Cain and Hevel. Cain is the villain and Hevel is the saint. In Neach, I draw a contrast between Neach and the Deir HaMavol. Neach is the saint and the Deir HaMavol are the villains. And so on. But when it comes to Vayeshev, so I become completely dumbfounded, because to draw a contrast between Yosef and his brothers would mean Chas v'Shalom to refer to the Shvatim as villains and Yosef as a saint. And how can I do such a thing when we all know that the Shvatim were also saints, in spite of the fact that the deeds they committed were so shocking that on the surface they do not seem to be explicable. For that reason, on Shabbos Vayeshev, I refrain from speaking. This is one Shabbos that I take off. Now, as he said, this machlokes between the Nitziv and Rabbi Sizbea is part of Vayeshev. I cannot speak because they are both gaining and they are both sorry. Now, you see that I'm not like they. I mentioned that story a year ago, and I reiterate that story just to point out that I'm not like the Magid of Vilna. The Magid of Vilna was a free agent, but I'm not a free agent. So, I have to deliver Ashkoshish here on Parshas Vayeshev. Now, In the course of this discussion, you'll probably find many points that I mentioned last year. The Torah begins with the incident of Yosef's repetition of his dreams before his brothers. But this narration is preceded by a statement that Yaakov showed more love towards Yosef than towards the other children. And this special love was manifested by a famous part, that is a jacket with many colors. Now it is self-evident that the brothers of Yosef were not little children who were jealous of a jacket, a striped jacket. This famous passim probably represented a certain kind of a uniform, just as today, so distinction is manifested by uniform. So then too, the famous passim was symbolic of a certain excellence that Yosef attained according to Yah. It was not the jacket in itself that they envied, but the love, the special love that Yaakov entertained and showed towards Yosef. Why did Yaakov love Yosef more than any other child? The Torah tells us that the reason was because he was a very schooling. Nicholas translates then schooling in the sense of Bachaki, a wise son. And Rashi says that then schooling means Shahoyo Zivi Kunin Shalei Dimalei. Literally, it means the facial expression of Yosef was the same as the facial expression of Yaakov. But it's not just a matter of physical features. Now, yesterday, a mandate was imposed upon me, I think, by Michelson and by Horowitz, that I discuss the distinction between a Rebbe and a Moira. Now you said that I should devote the service as coffee share to the discussion of that. You forgot already. So, now I said, I retorted that I don't see how it could fit in to the as coffee share of Vayesh. But after thinking about it, so I realized that it fits well into Vayesh. Now I mentioned yesterday in the share, the Rambam, that when a Talmud initiates a greeting towards his Rebbe, so we have to say to him, Shalom Alecho Rabbi. However, if the Rebbe initiated a greeting and the Talmud has to respond, so we have to say, Shalom Alecho Rabbi Umeir. The question was, what is the difference between Rabbi and Moir? Now Rabbi, you know, is a Rebbe. Moir means a teacher. You refer to the teachers in high school and in college as Moira, as a Moira. To a Gemara teacher you refer as to a Rebbe. Now that doesn't mean that you have more respect and more love towards the Gemara teachers than towards the college teachers. But this is just a coincidence that to teachers of secular subjects you refer to by the term Moira. And a teacher of Torah, you refer to by the name of Rebbe. We see that the Rebbe fulfills two functions. Because when he responds to a greeting, so the Talmud has to say, Shalom Alecho Rabbi, Umeir. We say, for example, Moireinu VeRabbein. So it means that the Rebbe of Torah is a Moire as well as a Rebbe. What is the difference between a Moire and a Rebbe? Now, It seems to me that the reason as to why Yaakov showed special love toward Yosef is because, as Rashi says, the Yinkel is still in Bachakim Ulei, Kol Masher, Lomad Nishem Ve'in Ve'yamos Alei. Rashi doesn't say, Limoid Lo, but Mos Alei. There is a distinction between Lamaid and Mosaya. We say, Meshe Kibotero Misinai, U'misoro Le'yo Yishua. The Yishua is King. Now, we find, I think it is in Parshat Kodesh, at the end of Kodesh, כחיל מה שעציבו עד השם אז מישת אינוסו בני ישראל את כל הרידו והיה מישת כל המלוכו ונאוסו איסו כשעציבו עד השם כאינוסו ויבורך איתו מישת. It seems that there is a repetition in these two psalms. First, the Torah tells us that the Israelites performed and built, performed all, everything according to the specifications by God. And then again it reiterates, then Moshe conferred his blessing upon them. Apparently, the Avodas HaMishkan represented or had two aspects. It had the aspect of Avodo and it had the aspect of Meroch. Avodo means service, work. And Eved is one who performs menial labor. Melacha really means artistic work. When a person performs Aveda, so the Aveda that he performs is extraneous to the person. There is no imminent relationship between the worker and the work that he performs. But Melacha has reference to an artistic piece of work. When an artist creates something, so it is not only an avodah, it is a melacha, simply because the artist injects his own personality into the piece of art. Now, the avodah HaMishkan involves two aspects. First of all, the Israelites were required to do all the work of the involved in building and in the various Klei HaMishkan according to the specifications given by God. That's neither. But then, the Mishkan could not serve as a source of inspiration for the Jews unless Bezalel and all the Israelites who participated in the building of the Mishkan injected their personality into the Mishkan. That was a piece of art. That was Milan. Now, the Torah says, from Parashat Pinchas, Vayimer Hashem Omei Shekach Lecho Es Yishua Benun Asher Warbe, Vishamach Tosh Yochol. That means, Yishua is your Talmud, and you will obey him. Vahamari Toh Yishe Yishnei Reza Akein Vishnei Kol Eidah Vishnei Yishe Yishnei Reineya. Vinyosat Omei Yitchol. You will bestow from your glory upon him, in order that he might be in a position to inspire the people. Yeshua was not only to have a Talmud Mora relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was also to have a Rebbe Talmud relationship. Now, a Mora is one who teaches. He performs work. He does an Aveda. He might perform the work very efficiently and very brilliantly, according to plan. But the meta taught and the teacher himself are two different things. When a Moré teaches, then he does not inject his personality into the disciple. A professor of physics, of mathematics, might be an ardent Nazi. and the students who study physics in his class might be Jews. Planck was a professor of physics. He was an ardent Nazi. He had many Jewish students. Did that mean that he was not a good teacher? He was a very good teacher. But he was only a Moreh. A Rebbe is one who bestows from his glory upon the pupil. That means Musa, to turn over. He injects his own personality into the Talmud. And the degree of indoctrination affected by Rebbe is not directly proportional to the quantity of knowledge that was acquired by the Talmud from the Rebbe. Now, the term Rebbe was applied to the Hasidic Rebbein more than to the Misnagdish Rabban. We all know that. He was called, the Hasidic Rebbe was called Rebbe by everyone. By all the Hasidim. Men, women, alike. Does that mean that every Hasidic Rebbe who was called Rebbe by his Hasidim, that he indoctrinated his Hasidim in the realm of knowledge? There were many Hasidim who did not acquire any knowledge whatsoever from the Rebbe. Still, they considered the Rebbe as a Rebbe. Why? Because he injected his personality into that. That's a Rebbe. A Moreh is one who just performs an avodah of teaching efficiently and systematically, and he enables the disciple to acquire knowledge. Now, it goes without saying that all the children of Yaakov were disciples of Yaakov. They learned something from Yaakov. They all learned about the great heritage of Avraham. But there was a distinction between the way Yosef learned and his brothers learned, and the way his brothers learned. Between Yaakov and the other sons, there was a Moreh Talmid relationship. There was no Messiah. He could not turn over. He could not bestow his glory upon them. He could not inject his personality into them. Their facial expressions did not become the identical of Yaakov's facial expression. The Zirikunin Shalohem was not normal Yaakov. However, in regard to Yosef, true, there was a Moreh Talmid relationship, but in addition to this Moreh Talmid relationship, there was a Rebbe Talmid relationship. Consequently, he was able to turn over, not just to teach, but to turn over. He was able to inject his personality into Yosef, and this is the reason as to why Yaakov loved him more. Because the reason as to why there was a Rebbe Talmid relationship between Yaakov and Yosef and not between Yaakov and the other children was due to the fact that Yosef, more than any other of Yaakov's children, wanted to have this relationship with Yaakov. The other children did not want, they did not try to establish a Rebbe Talmid relationship. They only wanted to maintain a Moreh Talmid relationship, professor-student relationship. Now, his brothers were envious, not of the Ksenis Pasim in itself. They were envious of the Ksenis Pasim because it symbolized the excellence of Yosef, in that he was able to establish a Rebbe Talmid relationship between himself and his father. They were not able. But the question arises, why is it that Yosef was able to establish a Rebbe Talmid relationship between himself and his father, and the other sons of Yaakov were not able? It's not that they didn't want to. If they had been reluctant to establish a Rebbe Talmid relationship between themselves and their father, so then they shouldn't have been envious of Yosef. Why be envious? They didn't want to. such a relationship to exist. They didn't want that Yaakov should bestow his own glory should upon them, should inject his personality into them. So why should they be jealous of Yosef? But obviously, they really wanted to have that relationship. Without that relationship, they felt alone and isolated. They realized that Yosef, on account of this very common relationship, on account of the fact that Zivikun Shalei's Domer Yaakov was never alone. And they were always alone, even the company of their own. So why were they not able to maintain this very Talmud relationship between themselves and Yaakov? So the answer is given in the next psukim that follow. Vayachlein Yosef Chaleim Vayadit Leachov Vayosifu Oitzno Yosef. Yosef was a dreamer. He dreamt. And on account of this dream, they hated him even more. Apparently, the dream capacity of Yosef was at the core of this hatred and this jealousy. And not only that, Yosef did not content himself with being a mere dreamer, but he liked to elaborate upon his dreams, to repeat the dreams, over and over again. And he repeated his first dream. What was the dream? Zine anachnu miyalmi malumim bisei chasode, zine komo ale motzi vigam nitzovo, zine yichisu beno ale meseichem, vatashticha zeno ale motzi. In his first dream, he envisioned his old brothers, all the sons of Yaakov, binding sheaves of corn, and he being standing among them and binding his own sheaf of corn, and that the sheaves of the other brothers stood upright and they bowed to his own sheaf. The brothers understood the symbolism that was involved in this dream, and they rebuked him. And they said to him, "Hamolich timecholeinu im moshel timshel banu." Do you think that you can reign over us? You can dominate us? They thought that this dream of Yosef reflected an aspiration of by Yosef to dominate over his brothers. The brothers of Yosef were very well aware of the fundamental fact that is mentioned in Chazal and is conceded by modern psychology, that the dreams of a person at night reflect the thoughts and the desires, even the suppressed desires and thoughts of a person. What is suppressed into the background during the waking hours comes into the foreground when a person is asleep. So they understood that if Yosef at night dreamed of sheaves of corn bowing to his sheaf, it meant that during the waking hours, Yosef was striving towards dominion, towards domination. So their hatred towards him was multiplied. Then he dreamt another dream, and that was Hashemesh v'ayoreach v'chatosho kechovim nishtachat, of the sun and the moon and the various stars bowing to him. And this time, the Torah tells us, v'aykanu v'yachof. It seems that with the repetition of his first dream, only the hatred of the brothers was multiplied, but not the jealousy. However, when he repeated a second dream, so not only the hatred was multiplied, but the envy as well. Why is it so? But in order to understand the reason as to why the brothers resented the dreams of Yosef so much, so we have to take cognizance of the fact that members of the human race are divided into two categories. One category consists of demons, or I can use another expression instead of dreamers, saying idealists. An idealist is a dreamer. And when I say a dreamer, I don't mean one who dreams at night while he's asleep. Every person dreams at night. There is not a single person in the world who doesn't dream. But I mean a dreamer in the sense that he dreams in the waking hours of his life. The dream of night is only the barometer of the character of the person and of the dreams that he conceives during the waking hours. So, there are persons who are dreamers, idealists, and there are persons who do not dream, who are realists. Now, most people are realists, not idealists, not dreamers. Yaakov himself was a dreamer, because Yaakov dreamt of Yisroel Mutavarto V'Roshei Magia HaShomayim. That was a dream. If Rashi says that Yosef was the identical copy of Yaakov, Rashi does not mean he was the identical copy in his physical features, but it means the spiritual image of Yosef was the same as the spiritual image of Yaakov. Why? Simply because Yaakov was a dreamer and Yosef was a dreamer. The brothers of Yosef were not dreamers. They were realists. Now, what is the difference between a dreamer, an idealist, and a realist? Now, a realist is one who is satisfied with the status quo of the world. The Yevonim, we are approaching Hanukkah now. Actually, the struggle between Hellenism and Yahudus was the struggle between idealism and realism. The Yevonim, the ancient Greeks, the Hellenists were realists. A realist is one who is satisfied with the world. The world in its present condition, the way it is. A realist is satisfied with nature and its primitivity, the way it is. A realist is satisfied with human nature, with all its brutalities, with all its cruelty, with all its wickedness, with all the voluptuous desires, the tigers of man. The pagans were realists. Hence, the deification of nature and the deification of the animal instincts raging within men by the ancient Greeks. Why did they deify the instincts of men? Because they were contented with the status quo of the world. They thought that the world was perfect. If the world is perfect, then all the instincts of men, in all its brutality and voluptuousness, is ideal. In the mentality of the pagans, therefore, the pagans addicted themselves to what they called physical beauty and to sensuality, because they considered nature in all its primitivity, in all its crudeness, as being perfect. This is a realist. A realist is one who is satisfied with what he is and with what the world is. But Yadus runs counter to this idea that men should be satisfied with what it is. Yadus says, a man should be contented with his lot, with his chilek, with what he possesses, with that which is extraneous to his own being. But a person should never be contented with his own being. A person should not think that the way he is, that's perfection. A person should never think that the way the world is perfection? If he allows himself to be swayed by this dangerous notion that the world is perfect, then there can't be any progress. Then he's bound to become engulfed by the moral abyss. Yadu says the zero here after Yadu Chalke, he has to be contented with his possessions, regardless the magnitude of his possessions, whether he has riches or he is poor, because the possession is something extraneous to the person. But a person should never be contented with his own being. Paganism says just the reverse. A person ought to be contented with what he is, with what the world is, but he should not be contented with what he possesses. He should always strive to attain more and more. So, a realist is one who accepts the grim realities of life, and he doesn't consider it as grim. He considers the realities of life as perfect, as ideal. There is nothing to be improved upon. Consequently, he has no reason to dream. An idealist is one who is contented with the external things of life, with his lot in life, and the other helping. But he is always unhappy with himself. He's unhappy with mankind as a whole. But an idealist believes that there is a discrepancy between the actualities of men and the potentialities of men. He is not enthusiastic of the actualities of men. He's not impressed with the demeanor of man as it actually manifests itself. But he is impressed, an idealist is impressed with the potentialities of men. He's convinced that men can attain the greatest power. But he's not contented with the heights that men have so far attained. Consequently, he always strives to attain more and more. Now, when I say idealist is one who believes that the world is not perfect, man is imperfect, but at the same time, this conviction that man is imperfect is coupled with an equally strong conviction that man has the potentiality to attain the greatest height. This is idealism. But there are two kinds of idealists. Idealism is not something that is always laudable. There is good idealism and there is false idealism. Now, a novi is certainly an idealist. A novi is a dreamer. A novi is one who tries to change the world, to change men. But the Torah speaks of a novi Oemes, and the Torah speaks of a novi Asheta. They are true idealists and they are false idealists. They are true dreamers and they are false dreamers. It doesn't mean that every idealist has to be adored. Many idealists brought ruin upon the world. Now, the early ideologists of communism and anarchism were idealists. They were dreamers. They were dissatisfied with the world. They tried to change the world. But did they convert the world into something better? No. They brought havoc and ruin upon the world. Why? They wanted to be scoring for the Asheka. But they were dreamers. Inasmuch as they were dissatisfied with the status quo. Now, the ancient Greeks were realists. Consequently, they believed that man has to adapt himself to all the natural instincts that inhere in man. And the Jews, the Persians, they were idealists. They believed the world is imperfect, very imperfect. God created the world in an imperfect form, as I mentioned several times, Shabbat Elohim Rasis, because God wanted men to become a partner with him in the fashioning of a new and better world. Man certainly was created in an imperfect form. If he allows himself to be swayed by his instincts, he can turn into a beast. But men have the potentiality to attain great heights. And therefore, according to Yadus, man has to be on the alert as to the constant struggle that he has to conduct against various destructive forces, physically destructive and spiritually destructive forces in the world. Now, Yadis is based upon idealism, but Yaakov's dream gave vent to the idealism of Yadis, that is Summa Mutza V'Artza V'Reishi Magia Shemaim. True, we cannot be satisfied with the status quo, we have to aspire toward a change, toward an improvement, toward progress. We have to keep on climbing and ascending higher and higher on the rungs of the ladder, whose apex reaches into heaven. But at the same time, Yaakov's idealism was affected by a realistic foundation. There must be a ladder that stands upon earth, upon solid ground. Now, I mentioned that the Yevonim were realists. The Purushim were idealists. The Dukim were also realists. Consequently, they believed that the Jews ought to assimilate themselves and to adapt themselves to the general environment. The overwhelming majority of the Dukim became integrated within the Mishyavnim group. They were realists. They were satisfied with the conditions that they were. But how about the Yisrael? The Yisrael were not realists. They were idealists. But they were false dreamers, false idealists. Why were the Yisrael false idealists? Because they envisioned only a ladder whose apex reaches into heaven. But they did not envision any foundation upon earth. There is no mutavah. But the idealism of Yadus, the idealism as it is expressed in the dream of Yaakov, is an idealism that is qualified by a realistic foundation. There has to be a sum mutavarto v'reishei magi ashmaim. So in other words, Yadus is not dedicated to the concept of pure idealism, but actually it is a synthesis between idealism and realism. And it seems to me that this concept of a synthesis between idealism and realism is implicit in the expression Derech Eretz. V'yosafto digonecho, so the Gemara says in Broches, Hanid bohen minag Derech Eretz. She'yei yodom chirish bishor shebni yodom chirishim, זיריה בישור של מי אודם זירי, נטילה בישור של מי אודם נטילים, אידיה בישור של מי אודם נטילים. In other words, a Jew is to participate in the upbuilding of the world, to do whatever is necessary for the upbuilding of the world. Now, why the expression Derech Eretz? It seems that the expression Derech Mi Odom would be a much more appropriate expression. Derech Mi Odom. Because it is natural for a man to participate in the upbuilding of the world in Yisrael. Why Derech Eretz? Derech Eretz means that a person is to deport himself in accordance with the manner of the earth. Now the earth does not plant, does not sow, does not till. What does it mean, Derech Eretz? Now, I think, maybe I mentioned it last year, I don't remember, that this expression, Derech Eretz, is actually based upon the Copernican notion that the earth revolves around the sun. that the earth revolves around the sun. Now, that idea was considered heresy by the church. Why? Because of the prophet in Yeshua of Shemesh be given day, which seems to imply that the sun revolves around the earth. The truth is, however, that the Zohar in Parsha Vayikra says that the earth revolves around the sun, not the sun around the earth. Why did Yeshua say Shemesh be given day? Because we still say sunset, sunrise. And even astronomers who are convinced of the Copernican idea will also say sunset and sunrise. So the earth, actually, the Derech Eretz, has two aspects, has two orbits. The path of the earth consists of two orbits. There is the earth makes a complete revolution around its own axis each day. That's one aspect of the earth, of the Derech Eretz. But then, in the course of 365 days, so the earth makes a revolution around the sun. Now, these two revolutions of the earth represent the two dreams of Yosef. Actually, Yosef was the Zivikunin of Yaakov. He was a dreamer like that, the same way as Yaakov was. He was an idealist. Yaakov's idealism was qualified by a realistic foundation. So was Yosef's idealism qualified by a realistic foundation. But Yosef was an analyst. He analyzed Yaakov's dream. What Yaakov envisioned in one dream, Yosef envisioned in two separate dreams. Why? We'll soon see. But actually, the three dreams of Yosef are the two components of Yaakov's one dream. Yaakov dreamt of Yisroel Mutavarat of Reishim Adi Ashamayim. There must be, of course, the world as it is imperfect. It has to be improved upon. Man, in his primitive form, is brutal. And he is driven by certain animal instincts. But it is within the potential of man to soar above these brutal and voluptuous inclinations. And it is incumbent upon men to keep on climbing upon the rungs of the ladder, which will lead him to heaven. But unlike the Ethiopian, who tried to build bridges in the air without any foundation, and who wanted to isolate themselves from the community and to deny to themselves all the joys of life. So Yaakov dreamed that there must be a solid ground upon which the ladder can stand. And unlike the idealists who tried to attain a utopia through force and through radical means, by means of revolution and war, so Yaakov envisioned progress that is gradual. Now, the Deira Ahlava, they are also idealists. Now, you have to keep in mind that when I say idealist, it does not mean that we have to adore it. There might be false prophets, false idealists, false dreamers. But the Deira Ahlava, the people of the Deira Ahlava were idealists. They were not contented with the status quo. They wanted a new order. And they wanted to attain great heights. And the tower was merely a symbol, as the Rav Amiri says in his Akdomah to his Perush of Oris. It was merely a symbol of their concept of progress. The tower. So they also dreamt of climbing up high unto heaven. But there were two fundamental differences between the dream of the Deira Ahlava and the dream of Yaakov. These differences were the following. First, in the dream of the dear Aslobo, God was not included. He tried to ascend heaven, just as men today try to ascend heaven. But God is not included. And if God is not included in a dream, then the dream is unavoidably bound to be a failure. Then there was another difference. The Tower of Babel had no steps, no lungs. You cannot climb up a tower just gradually, rung by rung, step by step. You need a rocket to climb up the Tower of Babel. This is like the dream of modern men. But in the dream of Yaakov, it was a ladder with rungs and steps, one step, another step. You cannot attain happiness for mankind through radical methods by means of revolution. It can only bring misery to the world. The sublimest ideal, if it is endeavored to be realized through radical means, is bound to bring misery upon mankind. But the only way to attain an ideal is by gradual progress, of climbing up, rung by rung, step by step. Sulamut of Arto, Vereshim Adiyah Shemaimo, Umalachi Alekim, Eilim V'Yeredim Bo. The Yisim were idealists, false idealists, because they did not recognize the importance of having a solid foundation upon which the ladder can stand. This is the reason as to why this movement of the Yisim ultimately culminated into Christianity. And then we know the repercussions of that movement. Because it was a dream of Reishim Adiyah Shemaimo without a Sulam Mutavah. But Yaakov envisioned it in one dream. Yosef